Morning, everyone. Tuesday, May 17. The Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever you're listening. Oh, I think we've had the biggest story in the NRL this year occur in the last 24 hours with Trent Barrett gone at the Bulldogs. But good news today in that we got the great Pupster back. Michael Clark, morning to you, champion.
Morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. My apologies for yesterday. Listen to the show, though. Boys are on fire. Certainly didn't miss me. But yeah.
You listened to the show?
I did.
What are you doing?
Not at 5:30. Not at 5:30, I didn't. But no, I caught the back end. Obviously, tough day for Trent Barrett. And the Dogs, obviously tough couple of days for Andrew Simons' family and friends, and obviously extremely sad. So that was obviously my reason for not being here yesterday. I just wanted to take a bit of time and reach out to a few people as well. And really tough. Just don't know what's going on with cricket at the moment.
It's just outrageous.
Devastating. Been a horrible few months. But yeah, I think these are the times you grab your family, your friends, and cherish every day, I guess.
No, exactly right. Just an extraordinary 12 months when you, well, not even 12 months, when you go back to the great Dean Jones, of course, as well. Rod Marsh, the great Shane Warne, now Andrew Simons at the age of 46. You know, someone obviously, particularly in the early part of your career, you played a lot of cricket with and spent a lot of time with Clarkey, and can't believe it. But, your heart just goes out to his two young kids and his wife as well.
Very tight with his kids as well. I think that was the one thing about Simo. He's always going to be an amazing father. Again, we were so opposite in so many ways. Like, the laughing joke in our team was like complete city boy me, complete country boy him, yet we built an amazing connection. We did things that I never thought I'd ever experience and wasn't comfortable doing, but with him he made me feel comfortable. You know, I remember we did a Winnebago trip from Sydney. We hired a Winnebago in Sydney to drive to Brisbane, and then we flew up north to Esmeralda. We had 2 weeks. So my job as a city boy was to organise the city trip, the start in Sydney, where we're going to stop along the way to get to Brizzy. And then he organised the back half from Brisbane up to Esmeralda. And talk about out of your comfort zone. We were fishing for barra on these banks where there was crocs everywhere. And, again, no way would I ever do that on my own. But with him, he just made you feel so comfortable. So, yeah, some amazing memories. Obviously, Simo was probably my favourite batsman to bat with in the Australian team. We just had a really good connection. Some of the things that we both enjoyed about batting, that running between the wickets, or even how competitive we were at fielding training to try and improve our fielding, brought the best out of me. So very fortunate to have spent so much time with him on and off the field, to have played with him. Probably the most athletic cricketer I played with. Absolute freak of an athlete. Speed, power, watch him dive and take a catch. Great fieldsman as well. So, yeah, a lot of amazing memories, mate. And I think, again, I said that about Warnie not too long ago. I think in times like these, and even Hughesy now, you think about him every day, but I think that's the key, to remember all those good times and celebrate those. And, yeah, there's days, there's feelings, there's moments, that are extremely sad. And it's hard to believe, of all things, an accident, a car accident as well. Like, I just so hard to comprehend. But, yeah, I think when you go through some of those feelings, you got to keep remembering the good times.
Absolutely. Phil Gould spoke on 100% footy last night, spoke to the media yesterday on 100% footy last night, though on Nine. Well, he said that Trent Barrett made the best decision for himself and his family after watching certainly the pressure he's been under in recent times. And he says that Barrett's replacement will be an experienced man. Gus said it's all been a bit of a shock to him. He likes to think the club has hit rock bottom. And he goes on to say, their recruitment in recent times has been based on urgency and desperation, but all a bit of a shock to Gus.
Well, I think everything that happens at the Bulldogs goes through Gus. I think Gus would be across it. I think that Trent obviously realised that his time was coming to the end, and he had a conversation with Gus on the Sunday night. And while Gus may have not said to him, "Trent, your time's up," I think he would have made it very clear to Trent that the direction the club is going in, Trent is struggling to find answers. And I reckon after that conversation, then Trent would have thought about it and thought, you know what, the right decision here is for me to hand my resignation in before I'm sacked. And I think that's the way it sort of played out. He's won 3 of 34 games. There's no doubt that Trent Barrett is a very good coach, but his time at the Bulldogs has come to an end. He couldn't get the best out of this playing group. He can only imagine the stress that he was going through. And, you know, as a coach, everyone has been there at some stage. He came across as a highly touted assistant coach there at Penrith, had a lot to do with their attack, but he couldn't get that same attack going at the Bulldogs. And he arguably had a better squad this year than what he did last year. So the signs or the writings were on the wall that Trent was, you know, days were coming to the end. And I reckon after he had that phone call with Gus on Sunday, they would have both determined that that was the right decision for the Bulldogs to move forward, was to resign and let the Bulldogs try and get something out of the rest of the season. But I think it is an experienced coach that they need. I know they still want Cameron Ciraldo, but if you're Cameron Ciraldo, you're sitting back at Penrith at the moment, you're thinking, geez, do I want to go to this club with a bit of, not a great deal of stability?
Well, who wants to go there? That's the problem. You'll have
people wanting to go because it's an opportunity.
But the right personality that needs to go
there.
Right personality. We get that person.
Well, you look at it, Mido. They've got an okay team, but it's going to get better. It's going to get better next year. When you look at Reid Marnie going there, Kickow going there, I think Ryan Sutton from the Raiders is going there. They're on a upward spiral. I think for me, as an outsider looking in, the playing group, I think that will look after itself and that is going to be stronger next year. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but it sounds as though there's still a lot of things that are happening in the front office. A lot of things happen behind the scenes because of members, how important they are in the organisation because they're the ones that control the board. That's the way it sounds. It sounds like the members control who they put in there to run the show, and if they're not getting the getting the answers that they need, then all of a sudden there's a coup on to try and oust a board.
Every 2 years. Well, how do you get stability?
Well, that's a good question. Oh. I don't know how you get it.
Well, it's only by winning.
If you're not winning you're not getting that stability because there's unrest. And when there's unrest and uncertainty, people start to worry and fear that it could be all over. So, look, it is what it is. Trent, I think, is Coach's last game as an NRL head coach. I think that's it for him as a NRL head coach. He'd have to probably go over to the English Super League and spend a bit of time over there or get back into the system as an assistant coach. I think he's very good at doing that and bide his time, and then he may get another opportunity down the track. But it's sad when you see a coach lose his position like this. I've got no doubt that he's a very good coach, but it just hasn't worked out for him.
Yeah. Dogs fans, who do you want to coach you? Be fascinated to hear who's at the top of your list. 1353 53. Send us a text 0419 767 272. So Phil Gould saying that they're going to put in an interim coach, and for how long is not determined, but it looks like probably until the end of this season, with a full-time coach to be named.
They're not going to get Kenneth Ciraldo now. They're not going to get him out of Penrith. He said that he will stay with Penrith until the end of the season. He's got a relationship with Gus. Gus has got a high opinion of him. But if you're Cameron Ciraldo, is the Bulldogs the right job for him at this particular moment in time? Because you know that Penrith are going to be successful for the next couple of years. He can just sit back and pick and choose the right club with the right environment for him to walk into where there's stability straight away.
Surely he's learning from Trent Barrett's experience, because Trent was in the exact same position 2 years ago.
Dean Pay's experience there.
You know.
He was the one before Trent. So both coaches have been sacked and both coaches have been young, inexperienced. And Cameron Ciraldo, if you're him or his management, you're looking at that and saying, you know what, I don't know whether this is the right club. I don't think this is the right club for you. Sit back. You're in no rush. You'll have success there at Penrith. You'll always be top of the charts. You'll always be an assistant that's in demand. And then you can pick wherever you want to go to when the right time, the right club has a opportunity for you. And you've got to go to a club with stability.
Mm. Just seems like it's been a never-ending... It's in Tigers territory as far as rebuild's concerned, the Dogs. I mean, this once mighty club is just on the scrap heap at the moment. A place where, you know, there's just no stability. The winning culture's gone. A club renowned for its toughness, that's gone. 5 wins in 34 games for Trent Barrett. I mean, Bulldogs fans thought that, you know, the turnaround was starting this year. Mm. After they got through out of the salary cap mess that they were in towards the end of the Des Hasler reign that Dean Pay had to cop, which he never got to build his own roster, really. And here we are, Trent Barrett finally got some new recruits in, but then Phil Gould comes out, and of course, Gould's only been there, what, a matter of months?
Couple of months.
He's come out and said the recruitment's been based on urgency and desperation. The one positive is a lot of players are off contract, if not this year, next year. So I think they've only got about half a dozen that are in their squad for 2024.
Well, the key one is Matt Burton. You know, he can go at the end of next season. He's got an option in his favour. So he's off contract. Well, he can start talking to other clubs after December 1. So you'd think that he's on $500,000 with the Bulldogs. He's worth a lot more than $500,000 to the Bulldogs. And I reckon a team like the Dolphins would have a crack at Matt Burton. Now, whether he'd be interested in going to Queensland or not and going to a new team, I'm unsure. I think his experience at the Dogs at the moment would be one of frustration and one of going, geez, can I see light at the end of the tunnel here? Because this could affect me as a footballer and my capacity to earn money, my capacity to win competitions if I'm still in this environment in 18 months' time.
What about these new players that are coming to the club, Loz? Would they have a clause in their contract that allows them to change their decision now Trent Barrett's no longer the coach? Could you see any of those players pulling out because of this?
I don't know whether they'd have clauses in their contract with that. Some clubs do have that.
Yep.
I don't know whether they have or not. It's something we might be able to ask Denny when we get him on the program later.
And where
today.
Would you sit legally with that? Even if that's not in your contract, anything to do with the coach, but such a major change at a club, surely the rules of engagement then differ.
I don't know, mate. If you're going specifically to a club on the basis that you were told that this guy was going to be the coach, it may change. It may have... ramifications down the track. You may legally have a right to say, you know what, I signed in good faith knowing that this guy was going to be the coach. He's no longer there.
Was any player going to the Dolphins, for example? Like, we're talking about Wayne Bennett is poaching every player. He's trying to get every player he can. So you're going there, your decision, apart from money, is because Wayne Bennett's the coach.
Yeah.
Surely if Wayne Bennett was to walk away or resign, legally... It's got to be something there that could cause chaos.
Mate,
here.
You know what? I haven't got I've got an opinion on that, but I haven't thought about it in those terms. Whether legally you're able to
get out of the contract
or not, just because the coach is there. I'm assuming, mate, you probably could if you were told and you wanted to play under a certain coach.
Yeah,
and he's no longer there. There could be an option there for you to fight it, but I don't know. I don't know.
Friday night, 6 o'clock, Leichhardt Oval. West Tigers versus the Bulldogs. Both teams 2-8. Wow.
Yeah.
Want to be winning that. Lots of texts here that we'll get to too, particularly on the Bulldogs now. It's a feature of the front pages of the papers today as well. On the front page of the Telegraph, Barrett draws a blank on Dogs. Coach quits after admitting he has no answers to fix the club's woes. On the front page, the Herald, dog of a day, coach's emotional NRL exit, back page of the Telegraph. And of course, Gus Gould on May 2. Trent Barrett will be the coach of the Bulldogs long after I'm gone. He's a long-term coach for the club. 14 days later, gone. And that is that was unequivocal. Only, 2 weeks ago? That was after all the... commentary after Gus had apparently taken training for a day there in their review and out on the training park as well. But the other thing that Gus said 2 years ago, and again, Loz, I just come back to you know, who's going to apply for this job, the calibre of people that are going to apply for this job. Because Gus said, I wouldn't be taking any job at the Bulldogs if I was Trent Barrett because of the toxic mess that the club is.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's not great. I think the board has changed since then. Mm. And I think there's some, you know, different people involved. But obviously everyone's under pressure there at the Bulldogs and they want to make change. And Gus is a cyclone and he'll come in and make those changes that he feels required. And obviously Baz's win rate was not good enough and they've gone in another direction. Someone will put their hand up for the job. I would say if you're an inexperienced coach, I don't think you'd want to go for it. I think you sit back and see what's happened in the past to Dean Pay and now Trent Barrett, and you think, oh, geez, that could be me. But you don't get too many opportunities to coach an NRL side. So if a young coach is looking for opportunity, he might jump at it. But I would think it needs to go to an experienced coach. I really do. I think it's an experienced coach who has been there, done it before, knows how to sort of get his way around a board, work with Phil Gould, try and get the best out of the players. I think they should be probably going for a Green or a Flanagan or some sort of type of coach like that. Because I think that's what they need at this particular point in time. I don't think it could work for a rookie, but if I'm advising a rookie, I'm saying, mate, stay out. Stay away from this. This is not your job. This is someone that has to have a bit of experience, someone that's been through the ringer before. You don't want to go there and be under the pump straight away walking into this environment because it could change again in 12 months. Could be a different board you're working with. You mightn't have the same support of the people that employed you. I couldn't recommend that to a young, inexperienced coach.
Okay, your say on the text line, RIP Andrew Simons. If what Gus is saying, they want a coach with experience, Brad Fittler, which has been mentioned, he isn't the coach we need. His coaching record at NRL level isn't that good. He inherited a Roosters team. Experienced coach, example, Paul Green and Shane Flanagan, says punter Pete. Freddie. Brad Fittler, of course, had that little stint with that. That was a long time ago, wasn't it? About 13 years ago.
I think he'd be a lot better coach now than what he was when he was coaching the Roosters. And you learn from your mistakes. I don't think he'd want it.
No way.
I don't think Freddie'd want it. He's got it too good at the moment. He's coaching State of Origin. He's got a terrific record there. He's working in the media with Channel 9. Why would he need the stress of walking into a Bulldogs organisation straight away? I know he's got a strong relationship, great relationship with Gus. He and Gus are great mates. But I don't know whether Freddie would want that. I don't think he'd want to leave the jobs he's in to go into the Bulldogs and try and be their saviour and then in 18 months' time be tapped on the shoulder if it wasn't working. See you later.
Big bad Gus Gould needs to tell Penn Guy Jr. if he's not going to have a go, then I'll just paraphrase that and say, get lost out of here. Poor old Barrett. I reckon he could honestly do better than half of them if he pulled the jumper on. No name to that one. Hey, lads, maybe Gus doesn't have as much say in the club as we all think. Also, the Bulldogs might have these players coming next year, but everyone said that about the players that came in this year and they've still gone no better. And that is absolutely true. They still have no halfback. Cheers, Cozzy. And we did think, you still had them absolutely in your bottom four.
Yeah.
But we thought they'd have more wins and losses.
I thought they'd be a lot better attacking team than last year. I still had my concerns about their win-loss ratio, and I had them in my bottom four, but I still thought they'd be playing a bit better football now. I always thought it would take a little bit of time. The big concern for me is always their spine. You know, the spine still needs a bit of work. And for me, you're looking at your halfback, you're looking at a fullback. Young Marshall King's gone all right as a hooker, but they've obviously got Marnie going there next year. So you've got two of your four covered with Marnie and Burton. You need to be able to get a fullback and you need to be able to find a seven from somewhere.
Morning, guys. After watching the Dogs games this year, when are the players going to be held accountable? Dufty, Penguy Jr., Ockenbord, to name a few that are not playing at NRL standard. Once again, the coach cops blame, says the Cooney Unicorn. Gus has been through more coaches than Murray's bus company, says Peter. Morning, gentlemen. Should the Dogs give the Walker brothers a go? 13 or 14 games to see if these two coaches, or the two coaches thing, works at NRL level, because I think they have proved themselves at lower level. Have a great day, the Southern Rooster. But I think that goes against what we're saying, Loz, that they need proven people. But that's for, on an interim role, is what the Southern Rooster's saying. That would be a huge gamble, to say the least.
Well, that's exactly right, Mido. And again, you get back to, you know, these board re-elections. Early 2024 is when the next board can be re-elected at the Bulldogs. So if you're a coach that is going to the Bulldogs, this board employs you, and you might be employed for three years or sign a contract for 3 years. After 12 months, if you're not winning and the board are up for re-election again, how's that going to play out? If they've been demanding success, they haven't had it, they've sacked Dean Pay, they've sacked Trent Barrett. What do you think they're going to do to the next coach if he's not winning games of football?
No one's
in
got
12
patience.
Months.
There's no patience anymore, is there, Loz?
No. So so that's the other thing that you're looking at if you're going to be a coach at the Bulldogs at this particular stage. You've got to weigh it all up and think, oh, geez, this could go pear-shaped very quickly.
Welcome back. Now, nervy times for Arsenal fans this morning as they look to sneak past their rival Spurs back into the top four, and they're playing at Newcastle, and it is scoreless after 51 minutes. So that means they're still, what, 1 point behind Spurs. So they need a goal there at St James's Park to the Gunners. Now, also this morning in the championship playoff, in the playoffs to try and get through to the, what, £100 billion game, as they call it, Huddersfield are up against Luton, and it is scoreless after the first leg finished 1-1 in that playoff in the second leg, and an hour gone in that game. Nottingham Forest, I think they beat Sheffield United 2-1 in that second leg's tomorrow morning. Now, also in the NBA playoffs yesterday, we saw last year's finalists both knocked out. The Milwaukee Bucks were beaten by the Boston Celtics in Game 7 in Boston, 109-81. So pretty dominant there, the Celtics. The Bucks really missed Chris Middleton, who was out injured for, I think, the whole series. In the other Game 7 yesterday, one of the worst losses in NBA history, and that's not an exaggeration, the Phoenix Suns, who went 64-18 in the season, top seed, hosted Game 7 of the West semifinals there yesterday against Dallas. At one stage on their home floor, they trailed by 46 points, and they lost 123-90 in the end. It was 57-27 at halftime, and Doncic, the Maverick superstar, had 27 points himself to halftime. So that was an absolute disaster from the Phoenix Suns yesterday, and plenty of fallout there. We've got Dick Fain, of course, coming on tomorrow morning. But give us a call, 1353 53, and the Bulldogs are looking for a new coach, looking like they're going to appoint an interim coach, perhaps today or tomorrow. Phil Gould told them to just take a couple of days off. They've got a good number of their squad battling the flu at the moment as well. Now, some other news around the Knights. Anthony Milford likely to be on the team sheet later today to make his club debut Thursday night against, well, his old club, the Broncos. And he's told the Courier-Mail he's not done in the NRL, how grateful he is to the Knights, and that he has great respect for women after, of course, he had those charges dropped and was told to go and undertake some courses by the NRL before they'd register his deal with the Knights. He's noted his two young daughters as well, and he's also paid, well, he said Andrew Johns has blown him away since he's been training with the Knights and has had a big impact on him as well. But Anthony Milford probably could be a real asset for the Knights if he has an impact there, Loz, in the way that we know he can when he's at his best. But it's been a long time since we've seen that.
Well, he hasn't been fit enough, I don't believe, Mido. If he's got himself in the right headspace, he's fit. Anthony Milford could light up this competition, but we haven't seen it for a long period of time. He's up there working with Newcastle. Andrew Johns' effect, what can Joey teach him? What can Joey get him to do out there on the field? Newcastle, they need a spark. They rely too much on Kalyn Ponga. Ponga's doing everything he can to get his team across the park. At the start of the year, we all waxed lyrical about the Newcastle attack and how great it was was operating, and it was good to see. But since then, it's just fallen away. Now, I know they've had some injury worries. They haven't been able to get their best team out there on the paddock. But Milford, he's a guy that would be looking to coming up against his former club and hoping that he can rediscover some of those old skills, because if he can, the Knights are a chance in this game. But from what we've seen so far off Newcastle, you'd think the Broncos will be winning this game. The Broncos have been one of the more impressive teams of the comp so far, along with the Cowboys. You know, they're showing a bit more toughness and a stronger attitude to defending. They've got a bit of strike in their team. They made the decision to move on with some of their players at the end of last year and give some of these young guys an opportunity, and they're starting to grow with every game. But Milford, if he still feels like he's got a lot to give, he's got to get himself fit. He's got to have the right headspace. And if he does that in the right environment, we'll see whether he's still got the skills and ability to play regularly in the top 13 for whatever team he's playing with.
And just on the Broncos, Loz, Tamari Martin's in doubt. He's got a hip flexor problem. So there's a call to roll the dice. Do you do it with Selwyn Cobbo and put him at fullback, or do you just continue to nurse him through on the wing there at the moment?
Oh,
it's a bit of a gamble, though, isn't it? For his confidence, if he makes a few errors.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's got an error in him, Selwyn. But I think on the wing, making that error, for me at this point in time, he's a guy that I don't know whether he'd have the ability to control and manoeuvre a defensive system. I think he'd be still learning that. Whereas on the wing, he can slowly develop. He still might make an error, but his carries are so important to you at the back of the field. He's an exceptional player, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if they pick him for State of Origin this year. Albeit he's probably not ready, but I reckon you'd be taking a gamble with him. You just know that he's going to be a 10-year first grader, 10-year Origin player, if he stays fit and healthy. As a fullback, there's a lot more that goes into it, and that's the only concern I'd have with putting him back there at this stage. You know, being able to play on the ball, just his fitness levels, playing on the ball, having strong communication skills and just organising a defensive line, I don't know whether he'd be able to do that at this level on a regular, consistent basis. But you might have to do it for a one-off game. You mightn't have another option. But if you can, I'd keep him out there on the wing, depending on what other options you had.
Okay, on the text line, gee, there's plenty this morning. The Dogs fans are out in force. G'day, fellas. This Bulldogs fiasco smells a lot like the Parramatta mess of a few years ago. As for any poor young coach thinking about taking it on, just remember, if it looks like poo, it smells like poo, and there's no need to touch it. Cheers, lad, says the crying knight. Morning, gents. Absolutely disgusting how the Dogs have treated both Dean Pay and now Trent. Surely the senior players have to answer up for their failed leadership skills on the paddock. Cheers, Dino from the Gong, sending that one through. And on the line now, we got Joey. Morning, Joey. How are you?
Hello, mate. How are you? All right?
Going all right, thanks, mate. Go for it. What have you got for us?
So now I run a Bulldog page, a very big one, actually, and I get a lot of feedback from a lot of Bulldog fans.
What is it, mate? We'll give it a plug.
So, yeah.
What's your fan page, mate? We'll give it a plug.
It's called NRL.
Yep.
Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs.
Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs.
Oh, this is on Facebook, is it?
Yeah, it's on Facebook. So I get a lot of feedback from a lot of...
what do most people want? Yeah. What are they after, Joey?
Well, what they're looking at, a lot of... bad feedback was about Kent Barrett to leave because of what's happening at the moment. But there's next in line, and a lot of people want Shane Flanagan in there, because of his experience and his genuine football's knowledge as well.
Yep.
But my instinct that I would like to come to the Bulldogs is Christian Wolf from England. Because his record has got about 80% win rate, and he's won three Super League titles out there. So I think he'll be a great fit for the Bulldogs moving forward. What do you think about that?
I think Christian's a wonderful young coach. I spoke to him quite a bit a couple of years ago. Yep. Met him through a mutual friend of mine who knows him very well. He's been an assistant for a long time, then got an opportunity over there in England and made the most of it. I think he's on the radar of a lot of clubs. Again, for me, I think he's an experienced coach, but I don't know whether I could recommend Christian being someone that I know well, reasonably well. I don't know whether that'd be the job for him. I think it'd be more of a job for a Paul Green or a Shane Flanagan, someone that's been there, done that. They can handle the emotional roller coaster. They're very strong-willed people. They've won premierships. Yeah, Christian, while he's having success over there in the English Super League, I don't know whether he'd want to walk into a pressure cooker of the environment that is at the Bulldogs at the moment. Me personally, I would say no. I would sort of tend to be following the lead of a Green or a Flanagan. But that's only my personal opinion.
Shane Flanagan, because of what he has done in the past with the Sharks and that,
yep.
It's sort of, you know, like, I know he's allowed to coach in the NRL at the moment now.
Yep.
But he brings a lot of sort of like baggage with him.
Yeah.
So, and plus his son, Kyle Flanagan, in there as well as the halfback. It might give a bit of favouritism maybe.
Like, yeah, a bit of nepotism. Yeah. No, I don't think so, Joe. This, and again, for me, I think that Shane has done his time. A lot of people don't agree with what Shane Flanagan did and the baggage that he'll bring to any organisation. But I'm a bit like when you've done the crime, you've paid the you've done your time. You should be open slather like everyone else. And I think that Flanagan has been working at the Dragons now for a couple of years. He's been an assistant down there. He's in part of the recruitment strategy role down there with the club. I know he wants to get into coaching again. I think that he'd be a good fit there. But again, I'd be looking for someone that's very strong-willed, someone that knows his stuff, someone that's very experienced, someone that's handled boards, handled sponsors, handled crowds, handled Gus, all those type of things. I think you need to take that into consideration. People that understand the way that he operates, and I think the fact that they've won competitions would hold them in good stead.
Good on you, Joey. Thanks for the call. You'll love this, Clarkie, too. Yesterday, Paul Vaughan, when he was leaving the club, so, you know, this. He's gone out and he's gone past the media and gone,
give him a serve.
Do you have to be here? You are the worst kind of people. Giving it. Dear. Paul Vaughan, who's obviously had a fair bit of scrutiny over the last 12 months since the good old barbecue there at the Dragons, just gave his little piece as he left
Belmore
yesterday.
Didn't think the yesterday. Camera was on when he said it.
Well, don't. Got the feeling he didn't care.
Yeah, unfortunately for Paul Vaughan, the media does have a job to do, and I think they had every right to be there.
Well, it's a massive story.
And it'd just be just frustration. I think he's obviously, like all the players, like Trent Barrett was, you know, was feeling the heat of expectation around their performances. You know, they weren't performing, they weren't winning, and when that happens in this world, there's a camera in front of your face the whole time. So it's obviously a build. He's obviously feeling for Trent Barrett as well. And I don't know. What's he hoping for? Privacy and, no one to be there. I think that's unrealistic. But, yeah, that would just be frustration coming out more than anything else.
And as a former player, I understand
that.
Yeah,
of course.
I mean,
course,
as you
before
get
had
older,
those days,
yeah.
Oh my God, I've said things like exactly that. Yeah, mate. How many times have I said to a photographer out the front of my house, mate, do you need to be here? Like, and again, you see, like, I had, Warney passed away. That morning, I had four cars parked out in front of my house. You know, all the TV stations. Like, do you want that? No. Would you like them not to be there to give you time and space? Of course. But that doesn't mean I walk out the front yard and just give them an absolute serve. It's, you just hope that they're respectful enough to, you know, I had one person knock on my door. The rest of them just stayed on the other side of the road and were obviously waiting for footage or to ask me something, but I didn't leave my house. So, you know, I think it's, for people that have never been in that world, you can, like, they go, mate, leave them alone. Like, give them their space. And you love that as the, like, I love it when you hear other people stick up for you like that to a photographer. I'm walking my daughter to the school and someone sees him taking photos, says, mate, he's dropping his kid at school. Like, give him a break. But when you've actually been in that place for such a long period of time, you're never completely comfortable with it. You don't love it, but you just accept that, you know what, they're just doing their job as well. And in this instance as well, at the Bulldogs, like, it's, as you said it this morning, Mido, but this is the biggest story of the year, really, in rugby league right now. How can the media not be there? How can they not ask the questions or want to find out more? Like, yeah, also, and trust me, I'm always on the side of, I'm smash the media, but they've got a job to do as well, you know?
Yeah, and that's a bit of frustration, I think, on Paul's behalf of what he copped last year.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so
of
he's course. Thinking, well, you know, I'll get one back here.
I'll give you one.
And again, I'm putting myself in their shoes as a player. Same. Not that I've ever sort of probably said that. Yeah. I wanted to say it.
Yeah.
As you walk past. But now that you're working in the media and you're on the other side of it, and as you get a bit older and more experienced, you know how to deal with certain situations. And you can't be talking to the media like that. You walk past and you're not happy that they're there, but they are there to report on what's happened.
And sometimes it's actually the person that's asking you the question or taking the photo, they feel uncomfortable as well. Yeah. Like, a lot of the time, you've done it. Mm. You've been at press conferences where I've been, where you haven't wanted to be there, but it's your job as well, right?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, but that's what, like, sometimes when you're the athlete or the celebrity or whatever it is, you just see, like, Channel 9 isn't like the one journalist, but you just want to abuse anyone that's got a Channel 9 logo on their shirt. You know what I mean? It's the actual person mightn't want to ask you that question or mightn't want to take that photo, but it's their job.
But their boss has told them.
And they've got no choice.
Go and get an answer. Go and ask this question.
You've got no choice. Yeah. Do not come back without that photo.
You can't walk back in the newsroom and tell your chief of staff you haven't got anything.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah. I get the frustration.
Thanks, Joey, for the call. Joe, good morning to you.
Good morning, fellas. How's it going?
No, not too bad, thanks, mate. What did you want to say?
Mate, I've been with the Bulldogs since the 60s. I was out at the Green. I was at the cricket ground when the Bulldogs knocked St George out and made the grand final in 67. I've seen a lot of changes go through the club. The problem we've got here now is, like, I don't think the board's strong enough. I don't think it's the right board, number one. Number two, in the situation we're in now, Bill Gould's got to take control, not listen to these people like this Joey that was just on the thing there, who knows nothing about the history of the club. I don't care. These people just get on social media, got nothing better to do. Bill Gould's got to take control in this club right now, the football side of it, and get a coach in there now. Not wait till the end of the year. Otherwise, we're going to lose the people we've got there, the good players.
Who would you like to see in charge then, Joe?
Flanagan, he's the only one. Mm. He's the one that's got the guts and the strength to work through this. And he'll pull those players in line. The ones that aren't having a go, they'll be treated accordingly. The ones that want to have a go will be treated accordingly. There'll be no nepotism there, I can assure you. He coached his son at Cronulla, and they did well. The bloke's a winner. He's blood and guts. He gets in there and has a go. That's what's needed. None of these soft people. I said when they employed the people on the board of Canberra, when they employed Trent Barrett, he's going to get eaten alive there. You need somebody strong with a bit of arrogance and push his own agenda and get the side going.
What's Flanagan's record like? People talk about Flanagan like he's won 5 grand finals as a coach. Is his record?
He built that side at Cronulla.
Yeah, he did.
He started from sort of scratch and built it into a premiership winning team.
Yeah, okay. So he's got that experience.
So he's got the experience of being able to build and mould a team.
Yeah, okay.
And I think where the Bulldogs are at the moment,
they need someone like that.
They need someone like him.
Yeah, okay.
That can, you know, pick and choose the right player to fit into the systems that he'll he'll have, and then just ride the players as hard as anyone. You know, he's a very emotional and very tough Shane Flanagan, as would Paul Green. You know, he's got an association with Gus. Me personally,
Flanagan has an association with Gus.
Yeah. He was at the Roosters there when Ricky was there at the Roosters back in 2002, three, four. I think
coached there. I think Jersey Flegg team to a grand final win.
Yep. Mm. And you know, I think it needs someone with a bit of a toughness about them. Just someone that's going to walk in, have a bit of a presence, not cop any BS and just go, boys, this is the way we're going to do it. This is how we're going to go about it. We're going to establish the old Bulldogs DNA about being tough and being unrelenting and being selfless and just ripping right in and building as we go along. But I couldn't recommend a young coach sort of diving in at the Bulldogs after the track record of what's happened to two young, inexperienced coach in Dean Pay and Trent Barrett. I mean, Trent came with the great credentials at Penrith. Mm. You know, he'd been a first-grade coach at Manly, sat out, got an opportunity at Penrith, and then all the accolades were with Trent in regards to how he turned Penrith's attack around. So he was highly credentialed to go into that job and perform, but he just couldn't get the best out of this team. So I think it does need a coach that's very experienced that can go in there and work with these players and give them a bit of guidance, but also add that bit of toughness that they're looking for.
Hey, Joe, I'll put this to you, though. A coach like Shane Flanagan or an experienced coach, and you say Phil Gould, Gus needs to take charge, but would a coach, a strong personality, an experienced coach, would they feel uncomfortable having Gus there and him perhaps interfering when they don't want him to?
No, not with Flanagan. Not with Flanagan. Okay. That's why it's got to be Flanagan. That's why it's got to be him. And they've got to appoint him now. Not at the end of the year. They're going to lose the players they've got now and they're going to lose the players coming that they've got signed. They've got to get him in there now and turn it around now. These blokes that they're going to put in from coaches, we're going to get more of the same. There's nobody in there strong enough with a strong fist and look these blokes in the eye and put them in their place and make them perform and do what they're getting paid for. Do what they're getting paid for. Get out there and give 100% commitment.
Okay, Joe.
They're not doing that.
No, we appreciate the call. We've got to go to the news. We'll take more calls and we've got more messages there. Bulldogs fans, have your say. 1353 53 0419 767 272 on the text line, and we'll speak to Denny Widler after 8 o'clock this morning as well. Also coming up this morning, Penrith great Royce Simmons. After 7:30 today, they start Royce's big walk. Just a lazy 300 km from Goolagong, there out near Caddoundra, all the way to Penrith. Oh, Arsenal conceded an own goal after 55 minutes and with 10 minutes plus stoppage time remaining. Newcastle leads 1-0 against Arsenal at St James's Park this morning. So that would put Arsenal in big trouble in the race for the top four. They're fifth and, as it stands, 2 points behind their North London rivals Tottenham heading into the last game, unless they can somehow eke out a point or perhaps even a shock victory here, considering they're a goal down late on against Newcastle. Also in the Championship, Huddersfield are leading Luton 1-0 in stoppage time of the second leg of their playoff. So Huddersfield just about into the Championship playoff final. Well, they'll play the winner of the semi-final or the other playoff between Nottingham Forest and Sheffield United. Jamie Rogers, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, guys, and good morning to all of our listeners. Clarkie, it's great to have you back. And
thanks, Jamie.
I sent you a message over the weekend. So sorry about what's happening in the cricketing world. It's absolutely devastating.
Yeah, thank you.
Jared, you mentioned it at the top of the show just about the results in the NBA yesterday. It was absolutely mind-blowing to watch the NBA's best team during the regular season heading home, eliminated by Dallas, who they kept hanging on. They were the underdogs going into this season. I absolutely love Jason Kidd, who is the coach of Dallas. He said, "No one gave us a chance. A lot of people kept saying, it's going to be a blowout." And his line was, "Well, they were right. they just had the wrong side. So it's great when you can see stuff like that. And Luka Doncic had 35 points, and you could just see he was, and of course he was, because their side's winning, but he was just having the best time. He often broke out in laughter after some of his buckets. He sat out the fourth quarter, and he said that he just can't wipe the smile off his face. It's the first time since 2011 they've made the Western Conference Finals. And just to reiterate how bad the Suns were, Luka finished the first half with 27 points, and that matched Phoenix's whole total of their team. So the crowd booed the Suns at halftime. They were down by 30 points at that point. And that was the largest ever at a halftime of a Game 7. It is literally going down as one of the worst results in the NBA history. And when you look back, though, at this series, and you look at some of the comments of Coach Monty Williams, of what he said, so after Game 4, he said, "I thought our first half defense was as bad as it's been all year." After Game 6, "We were about as unorganized on offense tonight as we've ever been." And then after Game 7, "We just played the worst game of the season tonight." So nothing really changed throughout the season. They just had really disappointing performances. And Dallas are a team of one superstar with a bunch of role players against the Suns. So also, the Suns hadn't lost to Dallas in the regular season since 2019 and swept them every time they faced each other during the regular season. So I don't know. There's many questions now, Jared, about this collapse. Was it that, did they buy into their own hype, or is it a repeat of what we saw back in 2016 with the Warriors, where they're so focused on getting such a great regular season record, they then just flop when it comes to the pointy end of the season?
Yeah, playoffs are different basketball, simple as that, but they were down by 46 points at one stage there yesterday. But the writing was on the wall in the series against the Pelicans as well. The Pelicans won, 30 games and snuck into the playoffs through the play-in. They were struggling a bit in that series as well. So the writing was on the wall, and it all came unstuck yesterday.
It really did. But what is a plus is that I think we've now got two really good series ahead of us, with the Warriors up against Dallas and Boston taking on Miami, and that starts tomorrow at 10:30. And I think we're in for, I reckon, out of all of those, all four of those teams could potentially take it out. So hopefully we've got some good series ahead. Now, just before I go, boys, some really serious allegations have come to light this morning about Cleveland's Rajon Rondo. He allegedly pulled a gun on his former partner and the mum of his kids. So this happened last week, but it's just being reported this morning. He threatened to kill her with the gun. It's alleged that he was playing video games with his son when the partner came in and asked the little boy to go and fold laundry. And apparently that just sent Rondo into a rampage. He pulled the console out of the wall. He then left the house very briefly for about 15 minutes, but he then returned and was standing at the window, just tapping his gun on the window, trying to get his attention of the kids and the partner. So really serious allegations of an urgent domestic violent order has been put into place. So not good what's coming out of the US about Rondo.
Okay, that sounds extremely hectic. JR, I'll be back. Thank you. You'll be back with the news at 7 o'clock. And also saw that former Victorian keeper Darren Berry. He tweeted that Shane Warne had arranged for he and Andrew Simons to be his assistants at the London Spirit for the 100 competition as well this year, which is just an incredible coincidence, isn't it, considering what we've seen occur. And many tributes are being left at the site of where Andrew Simons' ute was rolled outside of Townsville there on Saturday night. So lots of tributes there yesterday, seen on the news last night. And I guess, it's, I know there were complications as well in the relationship, but you had so many good times together, didn't you, pup?
So many amazing memories. Yeah. With firstly playing on the field with Simo, and then obviously our friendship off the field as well. We did a lot of stuff together through those years. And again, he was a brilliant teammate. You wanted to play with him. He always enjoyed himself. He was a competitor. You know, whether it was touch footy at training or fielding session at training, it was, he loved winning and he loved competing. So he was a great teammate to have. There's no doubt about it. And then that obviously for him and I become the same off the field. We very different in a number of ways. Again, like I said earlier, it was sort of, I was a complete city boy and he was the country boy, and he took me into environments and places and through experiences that I never would have done without him. For me, so many amazing memories. And an awesome teammate to play alongside, no doubt about it. So, yeah, really feel for you know, his family, particularly two young kids and his partner, and obviously his friends as well at this stage. Extremely sad. Such a shocking accident. And yeah, like I say, just the last few months has just been horrible for the cricketing world, to be honest. To lose so many brilliant people so quickly is, yeah, devastating.
I know he had a love of rugby league, and there was time there they were talking about him going to play with the Broncos. Did he ever discuss that? Was that ever serious, do you think?
I reckon that was more Simo than anybody. He loved the Broncos and loved Queensland. There was no doubt about it. I don't know what level of footy he played, but yeah, I think he went to a few training sessions. Yeah. And again, he was such a great athlete. Like, we played touch footy at training. It was like State of Origin. He took it so serious. He just loved his footy. But he'd go to games. I think, you know, the rugby league, fishing and cricket was just heaven
for him. You said the same thing about Warnie, didn't you, with the AFL?
Warnie loved his AFL. We did a fitness test. If they said you got to do the 2K time trial or a beep test, Warnie would laugh at you. Go, no chance. You give him an AFL ball, he'd be running. Everyone would be cooked. Everyone would be so tired at the end of the game. He'd still be down the other end kicking goals and just put a footy, an AFL footy in Warnie's hand, and Simo was like that with rugby league. What a coincidence as well. Like, both of them were going to go and coach in that. Well, Warnie was already there. He was already coaching, but he obviously asked Simo and Darren Berry to be his assistant. So, yeah, horrible.
Can you remember the last time you saw him, Pup? Simo?
I saw him at Warnie's funeral.
Oh, Warnie's funeral, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I sat two seats away from at Warnie's funeral.
Mm.
I think again, it's the shock, you know. It's just so quickly, no warning, no time. It just, shame. Devastating.
Give us a call, 1353 53. We've got Dennis on the line. Morning, Dennis.
Hello, mate. How are you going?
No, not too bad. Thanks, mate.
Hey, Rob. Hey.
What was that?
I said it's a sad day. Daly, where are you?
Yes, I'm here.
I just put a application in for you. Expect a phone call from Phil Gould in an hour.
not me, Dennis.
Laurie's not that silly.
Nah, I'm not that silly.
Mate, the thing with it is, Loz, when you're a good player or great player, you can't coach the players to be like you were. You know, you look at Wayne Pearson, you go back to Johnny Raper and Kerry Lamb and all those, even Mal Meninga at club level. It's a hard thing. You've got to be a psychologist. You can't get out there and say, you've got to play like this, you've got to play like that, you know?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
You've got to be a father figure to them, really a mother figure to them.
Yeah, well, mate, I tell you, it's a hard gig, and the scrutiny that they're under, Dennis, is by far and away more pressure than they've ever been under.
Yeah.
And they do need to be able to manage a lot of relationships with boards, with sponsors, with players, with families. It's a lot bigger role than what it was even 10 years ago.
Oh, mate, you know, I spent a couple of years over there. We're in Parrot with Sterling and that, you know, and Gary Fernley and Jack Gibson. And, you know, Fernley just wasn't tough enough.
Yeah.
He was good enough but not tough enough on his players to win. You know, he got to a couple and just missed, and along came Gibbo and there's no rules. You've sort of got to do it, but you know the players are on so much money and they're so highly stressed to perform. And if they have an off day, they don't come along and you say, "Listen, I can't play. I got a bloody earache." And they think you're a wimp, but you know your earache can affect your form on the field.
Yeah, there's so many things that go into it, mate, and you've got to have the right staff around you and the right support and create the right environment for those boys to play well.
When Phil Gould rings, right, just say yes but no.
No, I'll tell you this, Dennis, I won't be coaching again. I've had my time. Didn't end up well.
Good on you, Dennis. Thanks for the call. Morning, James.
Morning, boys. Condolences, Pup, mate. You went to war with Roy. That must be very hard to take.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
I just want to talk about the Tigers and the Bulldogs. And, Pup, you're a Tigers fan. How refreshing it is to know that your team's going to compete at the moment. For so long, we didn't know what we were going to get. And even though we aren't getting the results, it's just good to see that that level of commitment's there.
I think the way we're playing, I think that's the part that the fans are, you know, and it took a few games this season. I don't think we started well, but I think the fact that we'd love to be winning, we'd love those W's beside our names, but the way we're having a crack, I think that allows us to keep the faith that you get a little bit of luck or we continue to improve our list of players. And if we've got that attitude, then we are a chance of competing against some of these teams.
Well, that's how we'll improve our list with that effort. But yeah, that's back to the Dogs. They could be 5 wins this year. They could have won the first 3. They've only just lost goal to a field goal to Manly round 3. The last 2, they've been pretty close. Those results go the other way. The confidence levels change. All they're lacking is that strong leadership, playmaking role, which Reid Marnie comes in the side next year. I don't think they're as far away as people are making out.
Yeah, how far away do you think they are, Loz? Because at the end of the day, you did say they'd be bottom 4 this year, but they have those recruits. Still issues in their spine, isn't there?
There's the spine that you worry about, but with Marnie and Burton combining, I think their spine improves. The big one for me is Gus only recently saying there's a toxic culture there. Is that what that was?
Yeah, that was
words?
Late 2020.
Late 2020. So I'm wondering how much that culture has changed and how long it's going to take to fix, because if there's underlying issues there, because when you look at the playing group, yeah, you know, they should have been improved from last year, and they'll improve again next year. So I think roster-wise, it's not a bad roster to get, but if there's underlying issues that we don't sort of know about, yet we're just sort of touching around the surface of, you know, the culture's not great. You need to find out what the culture is. So if you're a coach before you go there, you want to know what those underlying issues are. Because when you just look at it on face value, you look at the players they have now and the players that they're going to get next season, you go, yeah, it's a good roster. But the only concern would be some of the comments that have been made recently about underlying issues. What are those underlying issues? And because when you walk into a club as a coach, you want to be on top of everything. You need to know, you know, what 100%. What they're thinking, what type of organisation you're walking into, what strengths, what weaknesses, what support you're going to do, what support network we need to put around key people, all those things, you know, you discuss and you want to know before you sign up to the job. So player-wise, you look at it and go, yep, no, they're not far away. But your concern at the moment is, what are these underlying issues that they're talking about?
Adam Pengilly, good morning to you, mate. How are
morning,
you?
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys.
Your assessment of what has played out at Canterbury?
Oh, Jared, the wheels moved quickly, didn't they? As can often happen with these sort of things, when it starts gathering steam, it gathers steam really quickly. And came to a head yesterday morning. Trent Barrett obviously had those phone calls with Phil Gould on Sunday night and decided to resign. Whether he resigned before he was pushed, it's probably a question we can pose. I think the board were willing to move on from him anyway, and they sort of resolved to do that on Monday morning, whether Trent decided to hand his notice in or not. So I think the truth probably lays somewhere a little bit in the middle about whether Trent quit the job or was going to be pushed by the board. So they've got to move on. They've got to move on quickly, the Bulldogs. I think this happened with so much haste. They don't really have a plan in place as such for now. We know that Gus doesn't do too much without having a plan in place, but they've got no caretaker at the moment. I don't think they've got any really advanced with any plans with a permanent successor for 2023 onwards. So we'll wait and see how it plays out. I do feel a little bit sorry for Trent. He's tried extremely hard to turn that club around, but ultimately it's results-driven business. And those last 2 weeks in particular have really haunted a lot of people at the Bulldogs. Those losses against the Raiders, minus Jack White and a few other players, and the Knights last week, who were having a terrible run of form, and minus a lot of players as well. And ultimately the club just couldn't accept those 2 losses. So very interesting to see where it plays out, Jared. They'll want an experienced coach, I think. I don't think they'll be going for a rookie at this stage. Who's that lead the like of throwing the hat in the ring? I'd imagine the usual names like Shane Flanagan and Paul Greenwood brought into the mix, maybe even a Christian Wolf coming back from St. Helens. So very interesting times at Belmore, boys.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. What about Cameron Seraldo's name has been linked because of the relationship he has with Gus? But would they be a bit reluctant to go to him? And only because the last assistant coach they got from Penrith, who received a lot of praise, was Trent.
Yeah, it's a tough sell to the members, Laurie, isn't it? Because it's virtually following the footsteps of another coach who hasn't had success at Canterbury. Now, a lot of people will say that Cameron Seraldo is going to be an outstanding NRL head coach in time, and I've got no doubt about that. We know he's very close with Gus Gould. They go back a long way at Penrith, and Gus has been a massive supporter of Cameron for a long time now. But would he really want the job at this time, Laurie?
I don't think he would. I think he's smart enough to realise he can sit back and choose the best fit for him. Now, I don't know what the best fit would be for Cameron, but what concerns me, and I said it only a couple of minutes ago, Gus's comments about, and it, you know, it was only 18 months ago, he's talking about, you know, the culture at the Bulldogs wasn't great and it's going to take a long time, and, you know, he didn't recommend Trent take on that job. How much has that improved since Trent signed and until now he's no longer there, and how much has it changed in the last couple of months? Because I read in your column today the next board elections are in 2024 and early 2024. So if you're a young coach, you go into this environment, and if there's still those undertones in the background and the issues that haven't been solved, and you don't have a great start to your coaching career next year, all of a sudden when those board members are getting up for re-election again, if you're only won five games next season, it won't stop them from risoling you.
Yeah, personally, I can't see it happening, Loz, to be honest. Look, Cameron Serrato is very close to Craig Fitzgibbon. We know that. And they've talked often about when's the right time to take the plunge. And Fitzy took a long, long time, didn't he? He could have had a job probably 3, 4, even 5 years before he took the job at Cronulla. And I think Cameron will probably follow a very similar path to Fitzy and still bide his time at Penrith. He might even look to try and, you know, go to a different system to learn a little bit more outside of that Penrith system and then wait for the right opportunity. I speaking to people around the game at Penrith in particular yesterday, I doubt that he's going to throw his hat in the ring for this job. He'll probably go to another coach who's probably got a little bit more experience in terms of NRL head coaching. So we'll wait and see how it plays out, but I would be surprised if Cameron Serrato is the one that takes over at the Bulldogs.
Yeah. And even for me, Christian Wolf, I think going into the Dogs' environment, I know people are saying he's had a lot of success, but when you're going over there and coaching St Helens, they're the best team in the competition by a mile, and they have all the great academies, and they're expected to win. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's going there expecting to win, and he's getting the job done. I think as a coach, you find out a lot more about yourself when you go through some dark times as well, when you've experienced that. So that'd be my only concern, because you haven't experienced the whole roller coaster of coaching.
Yeah.
You only experience the good times.
It's not a bad roster to work with, Boz, to be fair. Like, I think when you get Reid Marnie and Kiki out to come there, it's just going to strengthen a little bit. I still have my doubts whether it's a proper top eight roster by the time.
It's all over the shop for mine.
Yeah. Listen, they've bought players because they're available, not because they need to fill a particular hole on the roster, haven't they, Loz, in the last 6 months? Like, you look at the likes of Vaughan and Duffy who are available after issues.
Yeah, you know what it seems like, Adam, to me? It's like a team, a bit like the Dolphins. Well, the Dolphins have been a bit more strategic, I think, but it just seems like they needed to buy, so we're going to buy whoever's available without having that plan of, well, we've got this halves combination, we've got this back row, now we need to fill it with a tight forward, or all the pieces just haven't been sort of strategically placed.
Yeah, and there definitely was concerns within the walls of power at Belmore there about Trent Barrett's ability to improve a lot of those younger players, and not guys that they've brought to the club in the last 6 months, but the guys that have been around the system at Canterbury for a number of years. I'm talking the likes of Jake Averillo, Jade Knockenbaugh, Aaron Schopp, Jeremy Marshall-King. They've all sort of stagnated in a lot of respects, haven't they, Loz? They haven't really kicked on, and they've been in and out of the team, and that was a concern from a lot of people at Canterbury as well. So, listen, I wish Baz all the best. I'm sure he's going to find his feet at some stage at another club, probably in an assistant role. And he's a good coach. He's a good coach, Loz. You probably know that as well. And you talk to guys at Penrith about what he did with them in 2020 and some of the players, and they love the way he looks at the game and the improvement he brought to their individual game. So I'm sure he'll find a job somewhere. It's just ended very messily at Canterbury, hasn't it?
They've got two wins this year against the Cowboys and the Roosters, two teams not going the worst.
Yeah.
Such is rugby league. Amazing.
Well, they're both in the top four.
Mm.
Third and fourth, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. That's his two wins this year. And yet here he is out the door, 2 wins, 8 losses. Mm. Anyway, let's talk some racing, Adam. Nature Strip and Home Affairs, they've got a jump out this morning, don't they, at Rose Hill, ahead of, Royal Ascot Bound.
Yeah, Chris Waller will try and get them, Jared, as fit as possible before they get on the plane, because they only have a limited amount of time to do some work with them over there at before they head to Royal Ascot. And as you can often find with horses like this, they can lose a lot of condition on that long plane flight across to the UK. So this is a really important piece of their work heading towards that plane flight in a couple of weeks' time. And no doubt they'll probably be given a fairly soft time. But, yep, they're going to keep him apart, Chris, at this stage, with Nature Strip going to the King Stand and then obviously home affairs for the Jubilee Stakes. We'll see how they come through his jump out today, and it'll be all systems go, hopefully, for the fly the Australian flag over there at Royal Ascot.
Now, is Zach Lloyd transferring to Sydney?
Yes, he is, Jared. I've seen a little bit of him up there in Queensland. He's a very accomplished rider, the son of Jeff Lloyd, and he's kicking some goals, and he's decided to make the move down to Sydney to link with Godolphin, of all stables. So James Cummings has decided to take him on. He'll get some really good education underneath Darren Beeman there as well, and probably work closely with James McDonald to try and further his career. He had a really bad virus, he was saying, in the last few weeks, but knocked him around and put him in hospital for a week or so. So he's only just starting to recover from that. But huge move for the young man. He's a jockey with a lot of promise, and he'll get the best chance to try and flourish down here in Sydney with hopefully with a few rides for Godolphin in the next, I suppose, period over winter when apprentices really get a chance to shine.
Now, a horse that we haven't seen since the Villiers in 2018, so 3.5 years ago, Sky Boy, which finished, by the way, that campaign having won 5 straight races. What, it's on the verge of a return to the track.
Can you believe this, Jared? It's unbelievable. I'd almost forgotten about him, hadn't he? Oh. But he was an extremely promising horse sort of in that late 2018 period heading towards the summer, and he's a dominant winner of the Villiers there. And a lot of people had high hopes for him. Obviously, winning that Villiers gave him a golden ticket to the Doncaster. He did attend and couldn't race for the best part of 18 months, came back and twisted an ankle again and was out off the scene for a long time again. And Anthony's just trying to get him back slowly to peak fitness and trial yesterday at Randwick, and it was a pretty soft trial. So I'll tell you what, it's going to be a hard ask to win a race, any sort of race, after that long off the scene. But Anthony's going to try, and we'll see how he comes back to the races.
That's incredible. Good on you, mate. Have a good day.
See you, boys.